down of what's going on here. Now let's talk about what you guys want to talk about. We've got two things going on that are kind of interlaced here. We have the swim advisory that went out last week, and we have the goose depredation efforts that we started yesterday, and we plan to continue doing that. Although I did just get a cease and desist within the last hour. We've got some people here that are trying to stop us from doing that. We'll see more about that next week when we meet with these folks. But we aren't going to let it stop us. We're going to continue doing what we're doing. Let me go a little bit to the swimming advisory. One of the questions I get, the demands I get, are be transparent. Tell me everything you're doing, why you're doing it. And they want to know everything. They want to know exactly what we're doing, why we're doing it. They want to see paperwork and all that. And we just can't be transparent. And I've said this in the past. People have heard me say this over the last couple of years. And I can't say it. And the reason I can't be completely transparent, there's people in this room that would use that information against us to stop us from what we're doing. So there's some things we do that we just can't share. Because if we use it, if we tell them what we're doing, they're going to use that. That cease and desist order I got today had some information in it that I had to share with the community. It doesn't help our cause. So there are going to be times that we don't share everything we're doing with the community, but you have to trust that the association's doing the right thing. We've never misled you. We're not doing something that's wrong. It's just we have to do what's best, and to serve you best, there's times that we have to keep stuff to ourselves until later on, until we get there. So some of the things I'm going to talk about today, I'm not going to tell you everything that's happening behind the scenes with the legal issues, the cease and desist, the arbitration we're going through. There's a lot of things happening legally behind the scenes that we just can't share because it'll tip our hands and make things harder for us. So let me go back to the swimming advisory. We issued the swimming advisory last week. This isn't the first of the swimming advisories. This is at least the fourth I know of in the last 6 years that we've done. So it's not something new. But it is something that we're more aware of now. In the past, we did not have the rigorous testing that we have today. We test the water a whole lot more often. We test it in different ways, and we're using different labs. So we're seeing things that have always been here. We just didn't know about it. So we didn't know to issue these swimming advisories. And there were people that were put at risk going in the water and doing things, and we just didn't know it. So now that we know it, we have to put these swim advisories out. So the swim advisory that went out last week was a collaborative effort between us and Nevada County Environmental Health. And I know some of you out there have reached out to Environmental Health and think that I made this up, and I used their signs and I pushed it out there without telling them. And a lot of you are calling Environmental Health demanding to see that paperwork, demanding to see the emails, and Save Our Geese are doing it. Some of you are doing it. You're not helping us. You're hurting our cause. I've talked to Amy Irani. She's the deputy, or she's the department manager up there. We've worked with her for years, and kind of how the conversation goes with Amy, and I've done this for years, is I call her up, say, Amy, here's the issue we have. I know what you're gonna tell me to do, and I've already done it. Here's the results. I know you're gonna tell me to go do this. I've already done it, and here's what I think we should do. And she's like, you're right on, because we've done this many times over the years. And I learned all this from Amy back in 2016, 2017, when we first had this problem. I called Amy and said, hey, I have no idea what I'm doing here, but this non-E. coli looks bad. What do I do? She goes, Sean, go do this and call me back in 3 days. So we went out and we did that. We called her back. She's okay, now I want you to go do this. I went out and did that as well. Came back, and at the end of it, she's like, okay, here's how we're gonna handle this. And we put out swim advisories. So this year, when we saw the high E. coli numbers, we went out and did the different tests. We did everything that I knew she was gonna ask me to do. I called her back and said, okay, Amy, here's everything that you're gonna ask me to do. What do you think? And she said, Sean, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna do an advisory. And all the advisory is putting the word out there that if you swim in the water, it may be unhealthy. The bacteria that we're testing for is unhealthy and it could cause illness, so we know that. So this was a complete collaborative effort. There was nothing hidden about it. Amy was well aware of it, and Nevada County was well aware of what was going on, and we issued it at her direction. So everybody's seeing the advisory that went out, and what it means is the E. coli numbers are higher at times, and they fluctuate. They're always up and down, and it really is dependent on where are the geese right prior to testing. In the shallow, warm water, we test in 2 to 3 inches of water, really close to shore. The water's hot, it's warm, and there's sand there. There's no plants. It's just the goose feces, and those numbers are going to be high. And we know that. If we went off of those numbers, we'd have to close every beach all the time because those numbers are so high. But the standard for testing for E. coli is a couple of feet of water, 20, 30, 40 feet off of the shoreline. You go out and you go a foot under the water, you collect your sample, and that's what you're testing, because that gives you a better number than what the shallow is. Or if we go out to the deep water, I can go out to the deep water and test, and there should be no E. coli, none whatsoever, because it's so diluted out there. So we test where it kind of makes sense. So we go out, we test those numbers, they fluctuate. And what we found is some of our beaches had high numbers, some of them had low numbers. Park 4 had high numbers on one side, low numbers on the other side. And then we went out and tested again a couple of days later, and they swapped. So it's just because those geese are moving around, and it's dependent on where the geese are prior to us taking those samples, and we know that. And that's why we move a little bit offshore to take the samples. So it really is, it's something we can't, when we get a high number, just go in and close the beach, because that sample is a moment in time, and that is typically 3, 4, 5 days prior. So if I go out and test it and I get a number of 500, 600 parts per million, that may be a couple of days ago when it may be down to 10 parts per million now, and I don't have to close the beach. But we don't want to restrict all the beaches unless we have to. So it's one of those things, it's really hard to judge when you should close the beach and when you shouldn't. And so it goes back to swimming advisory. Let's do a swimming advisory. It makes sense. Let everybody know you're swimming at your own risk. We know that the E. coli is out there, and we know it could be a problem. One of the other things I heard is there's this conflation of, well, because the lake is in horrible shape because you didn't spray, or you did spray. And I get both. I've got people emailed me like early in the year. I look at their email. It's like, how dare you spray the lake? Don't ever spray the lake. I love this lake. And now I got a nasty email from 3 days ago going, how did you let the lake get like this? Did you never spray for the lake? From the same person. So it's like, it's a no-win here, but let's not conflate the health of the lake. The lake is extremely healthy. The lake has the right amount of plants, right amount of fish, the right amount of oxygen, the pH, the turbidity, everything in the lake is great. The lake itself is very healthy. There just happens to be bacteria in it from the geese. And the bacteria does not affect the health of the lake. The lake is still healthy, the lake is still doing its thing, and it's no issue there. But let's not conflate the, we didn't dredge, we sprayed too early, we sprayed too late, there's no fish, there's not enough fish. Let's not conflate that with the bacteria. This is a completely independent and separate issue. It has nothing to do with the health of the lake. Okay, going back, we talked about it, that, you know, the geese problem has been here for quite a while. There's been people in here, I know Ron's here tonight. Ron's been working on the goose issue for a long time. We've got a long ways in the last couple of years getting permits, non-lethal methods, everything we do to try to curb the geese. So this isn't something new. It's, again, it's something that we are testing more often, and we're seeing the numbers more often. We're seeing better numbers. One of the questions I had is, it's not the geese, it's sewage. It's raw sewage, because that's what they say happened at Lake Wildwood. It's not the raw sewage, people. It's not the raw sewage. When we have these issues, we also reach out to Nevada County Sanitation and say, hey, do you have any known issues? Is there anything going on here? And they could test for this. They could do pressure testing. They can put dye in the sewage, and we can watch and see if it leaks in the lake. We can see if that dye is anywhere. No indication whatsoever it's raw sewage. And it doesn't make sense if you could pour 10,000 gallons of raw sewage in Park 4, and you wouldn't have the numbers show up here at Park 1 or at the main beach. It's not going to happen that way. And the fact that we have high numbers at 4 one day, high numbers at 1 the next day, and 7 the next day, it's not raw sewage. That would mean this entire system is leaking into the lake, and that's not happening. So let's just, when people say that, I know there's some people that are opposed to the depredation, and they swear up and down that it's raw sewage. It is not raw sewage. That is not truthful in any sense of the matter. It's just not happening. The other one I hear is, it's an inflow from the heavy rains we've had. It's not the geese, it's all the rain we had back in March and April. That was March and April, people. Those numbers would have spiked back in March and April. They didn't. When we tested in April, we tested in May, we weren't having these spikes. So it's not those numbers. It's not the feces coming from the cattle, coming from the raccoons, coming from the squirrels. I had a whole list of things that they came from. It's not them. It is the geese. I know people are not going to believe me. It is the geese. So So the big question I get is the safe, is the water safe? Are the lakes safe? The beach is safe. Everybody's got to take, you got to take accountability for yourself. If you are okay with going in the water, then do it. It's really up to you. I would go swimming in a lake. I'm not worried about the lake being unsafe. Most people here are not worried about it. If you get in a couple feet of water, when the water's cooler, it's moving around, it's not unsafe. When we have boats on the water and they're running around and they're making all these waves, it's mixing that water up. It's diluting it even further, and those numbers come down even more. So we just got water testing results in the last hour or so, and the numbers are way down from where they were last week. So it really depends on what's going on out there, the movement of the water, how hot it is. And if you get in that shallow water, 2, 3, 4 inches of water, it's warm, it's on the sand, it's probably, it's safe to be in, it's just not safe to drink. Just don't ingest the water. And that's really where we have the issues. That's where people get sick, is when you have toddlers, you know, 2, 3 years old, splashing around in the water, and they're sitting in a couple of inches of water, and they're mouth open, splashing, and they're ingesting it. That's what it is. That's how people get sick. Their immune systems are not what someone, an adult would be. Elderly that have compromised immune systems probably shouldn't be in there either. But is it safe? I have no doubt that you can get out there and swim, you can get offshore, you can get out of that shallow water, and there's no issues. The samples we took yesterday, we wanted to kind of set a baseline to show what the difference is. We took some numbers within a couple feet of the shore, and then we took them 50 feet off the shore. And the numbers 50 feet off the shore, for the most part, are way lower than what you get right next to shore. So the further away you get from shore, the less bacteria that you're gonna have in the water. One of the questions I get is, let's see if I can pull this up. I just put a couple of slides together real quick. One of the questions I get are, who's testing and, you know, how are they qualified? Thinking that we're buying this test out of a box and we're sending somebody down, 7 to 17-year-old pool monitor out to test our water. That's not true. Okay, so we use a company called 49er Water. They're out of Grass Valley here. We've been working with them for years. We started really working with them back in 2016, and that's when we realized we started having water issues that we just weren't catching. We weren't testing enough, and we were testing for things that we didn't care about. We tested for stuff that nobody cares about. Scientists don't care. And I asked people a bunch, you know, hey, we got this great big test. Does anybody look at it? And there's not a single person in the association that looked at it or even knew what it meant. So we went back and said, okay, what do we really need to be testing for? What are we looking at? And we created a whole new testing program. So we've been working with them for years, and they are they call them ELAP, E-L-I-P, Environmental Laboratory Accredited Program. They're accredited by the state of California. They're just as good as every other lab out there. They test our water. They're certified by the state as well as everybody else. And they follow the same standard, the federal standard on testing for water. So they're testing, and I don't even know what all that stuff means, but AWWA, EPA, ISO, they do all of that because that's what the feds say to test for. So they're testing our water just like any other lab in the state of California, even a government lab, it doesn't matter. So we have the best test being done. There's no issues with our, the test's sound. Does it make sense? Yes. Every test we get, they give us back a chain of custody. They fill out every one of these forms. Every bottle they go and collect, they label it, they number it, and they account for it. They put it in a cooler, then they go around to the next spot. So they have all of them together, and they do this chain of custody that goes with the report to the lab, just to ensure that we're not mixing up samples, we're not getting Lake Wildwoods, we're not getting anything else. These are our samples, and they're valid. And then they give us the integrity log sheet. Integrity log sheet, make sure that sample when it got to them was still, you know, was it sealed? Was it cooled off the whole time? Is there any chance that it sat out in the sun or they dropped it or anything or contaminated it? So they provide all of this for us. Every sample we get, every test we get has all of this paperwork with it. Then we got to dig through all of this paperwork to see what are we really looking for. As I said, we test every 2 weeks, and there's a few tests that we look at. We look at pH, we look at turbidity, We look at total coliform, we look at E. coli. There's a bunch of different things we look for in there. But the ones that we're most concerned about in the health and safety are the E. coli numbers. And this is a sample of what one looks like right here. This number is 90. There's E. coli in everything we eat and touch, ingest. What we're looking for is the bad E. coli. We don't like the STEC, which is a Shiga toxin, Estra something or another, long name, it's a scientific name. That's what we're testing for. And if you look at the total chloroform, when you get a sample, you're gonna have this much total chloroform, then you're gonna have this much fecal coliform, and then you're gonna have this much little tiny dot of the STAC, the Shiga toxin E. coli that we're looking for. And that's really what we're testing. That's what we're concerned about. The other stuff, you put it in your mouth all the time, it comes in your hamburger, it comes in food, it comes on vegetables, all of that. That's not what's gonna hurt you. It's the toxin-producing E. coli that we're looking for. This state, different states around the country have different numbers. They all have kind of a different level on what they want or what's safe. We use the numbers 200 and 400. When it gets to 200, we're gonna put an advisory out. When it gets to 400, we're gonna close down a beach or a body of water because over 400 is unhealthy and it can make you very sick. There's only been a couple of times I've seen where we've actually had continuous numbers over 400. We get over 400 every now and then, but it's usually when we're testing in that shallow water. And those tests don't count. When we test in that 2 to 3 inches of water, that doesn't really count, except for us to give an advisory, just to let people know that, hey, if you're in that shallow water, you may get sick. These numbers are taking, where it says near shore, that's 30 feet off of shore, it's a foot under the water, and that's where we take that sample. And that has 90 parts per million in it, or most probable number. I think that's what the MPN is, most probable number, is most probable 90 per liter. Again, we can go up to 200 before we put out a warning, 400 will be shut down. So that's really what we're looking for. Recently, we had some tests that came back. It took a little while for us to get the test. Some of the numbers were higher, up in the 600, 700, 800 numbers, but those were the ones in the very shallow water. And that's why we went to the county and said, okay, we got the shallow numbers that are really high, but our offshore numbers weren't so bad. And that's why we said, let's go ahead and do the advisory. And this kind of goes back to what I was talking about, the total coliforms. A lot of our tests come back, and the maximum number that our test can actually identify is 2,419 parts per million in a liter. Our numbers are off the chart. They say greater than because they can't measure that high. But that's total chloroform. That's all that other stuff that's not as harmful, not as bad. And then you get down to the fecal coliform, that's the bad stuff that's coming out of the geese for the most part. And then below that, you got the E. coli. E. coli is the stuff that will make you sick. But the one that we test for is that bottom one, the pathogenic E. coli. That's the STAC 01H7, I think, or H57. 0157? 0157. That's the strain that we're worried about. That's the one that we test for all the time. In every one of our tests, we're testing for that. So that's really what we're looking for. There's been a lot of studies out there. You can do your own research, do a search for 0157H7 and geese, and you're gonna find so many scientific reports that this is coming from the geese species. So again, that's what we're looking for. That's all we're really concerned about. The chloroform, not so much. Okay, so that's a little bit about the E. coli. That's what we're looking for, that's what we're testing for, that's kind of the history of it. And I've also, some of the questions I get as well, is it possible it's coming from the livestock and it sits in the water and just kind of sits there until you test it and it comes out, and that it's not doing that either. It all has a half-life. It's gonna live, 60 to 90 days under ideal conditions. It's going to dilute. Once it dilutes, it doesn't, you have to have a lot of these E. coli, STAC in your system to make you sick. So once it's diluted, it's not as harmful. And after 60, 90 days, it's gonna die off. It's gonna burn up in the sun. The solar radiation is gonna kill it off. So it's not that big of an issue. So any questions on E. coli before I move on to the depredation? Anybody have any questions about E. coli? Yes. The question is, would more aerators help in the, it could, but it could affect other things. There may be a negative impact with the aerators. One of the things we're looking at, we're talking to some people right now, is something called water movers. And basically it's a big fan. It's mounted underneath your dock and we put them throughout the lake. We put them on all of the community docks, the association docks, a few other people put them on their docks. And it kind of just gets that water moving around again. Like I said, when the boats are out there, it's mixing that water up and it's diluting that. If you got these water movers, you can move that water around and dilute this even faster. So there's talk about maybe water movers. We're gonna look at that. We were talking to a limnologist right now, and we're actually gonna put something together and bring it to the board next month, start looking at some of those different things we can do. Yes, sir.
An idea to flush the lake?
The question is, can we purchase more water to flush the lake? We could always purchase more, of course it's at a cost, but I really don't think that the volume that we would get would make a noticeable impact on the amount of water we have in the lake. It's such a small amount coming in that that percentage wouldn't dilute it enough. The best thing is just the boats on the water at the time is really what does it to have those numbers come down. Yes. What will it take to lift the advisory? You know, it's a tough one. I mean, we could probably lift it right now. All the water, all the numbers are good that we just got in the last hour. So all of our numbers are good, but that was just a moment in time. That was yesterday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And the geese, I saw them a bunch over here on, you know, Park 7. If we went and checked Park 7 right now, I think that number would be up. So I really think at some point we're gonna get to a kind of a standing advisory. It's, you see a lot of lakes around here, Nevada County does it. You'll probably just have a standing advisory just saying, hey, if you enter the lake, beware, there is E. coli in every lake, and this lake is no different, so just kind of be cautious.
When you said that our test results today were better,
yes,
are they like 50% better, 75% better? That's one question. And number two, why do you think they're better?
Why are the numbers better today? Well, we tested in two spots. We tested in the shallow water. In the shallow water, those numbers are still high. The waters offshore are a little bit better. I think a lot of the numbers we had were pre-4th of July numbers. So I think all of the water action, the time, I think till June 28th was most of those numbers. So I think time has helped out, just diluted the water. All of the action on the water has kind of diluted those numbers. I mean, they're not perfect. They're still up there. You just saw that one was still 90. And somebody, you know, with a compromised immunization system could get sick, or immune system could get sick from that. So they're not perfect, but they are better. I saw another hand here. Yes, ma'am. SaveOurGeese.com. Who is that? They're not telling us who they are. They're hiding behind the scenes. I have a pretty good idea who they are because I'm going to meet them next week in arbitration. Mike and I will. So we'll sit across from them, and they can't hide. So we will see them. They are made up of members of the community. There are some members in the community. Oh, okay, sure. So, yes, they are members of the community, but it's also being sponsored by the Humane Society of the Sierra Foothills. They're the ones really pushing this. They have a law firm that is backing them as well, you know, bankrolling most of the legal action. So it really started here with members. There are quite a few people that aren't in our lake that are also part of this member. And the board got an email from them, and it was a blatant lie that she's a member here and she's having this great big party next week. And it's not true. She's not a member. She is not a member. No. Yes. No. We've looked up some of those and we've reached out to them and say, can you help us out here? I'm not aware of that family, and they've gone quiet. So no, they are not members. We got all the databases, and the people that are pushing it are not necessarily members here.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
Is there a system set in place for keeping the water level full? And if so, do we use reclaimed water or do we use fresh water?
The question of the water level, it's all fresh water. It's coming out of Combee. Everything that comes down the Bear River is pumped from Combee up to the water treatment facility. Water treatment facility will take everything they need to treat our water for drinking water, and then the rest dumps into the lake. We have a contract by, it's 125 minor inches, which is, I forgot the number, but it's a couple million gallons a day. that we put in the lake.
Thank you.
Sure.
You know, Sean, I'm kind of shocked because we're talking that, well, this is not too much Ecola. There's 3 to 4 inches and students, people are walking on this 3 to 4 inches to get to the deep end. That's where our children are.
Yes.
I do not like that. We know the problem is the geese. Everybody knows that. And you know, I don't care how many times they come after us, we have to fight the cease and desist. And we have to keep this up, and I'm counting on you to get the people out there at shoot geese at least 3 times a week.
All right.
and let me tell you something. We know it's the geese, and then you go lay your towel somewhere on the beach. All right? And there's a lot of goose poop all over the place. I mean, for God's sakes, what do we have to do? We really need to take care of business. And Sean, if you step it up, I guarantee you there's a lot of support out here for you.
No, I appreciate it. I know everybody's supporting us. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind when we're going after this depredation permit and we're talking to the feds, you know, and a lot of, I know the goose poop is disgusting. I know it looks bad. I know it gets on your shoes. It gets on your golf cart tires. It's all over the walkway. That is not a reason to get a depredation permit. We have to keep the focus on the health and safety of our community. That's what the feds care about. I've got people say, well, send them pictures of all the goose poop that's on the sidewalk. And the feds don't care about that. We need to focus on health and safety. And that's what everybody needs to carry, that same message, is we want our depredation permit, the health and safety of our community members, not because it looks bad, not because there are too many geese, not because they make a lot of noise, they're ugly or whatever it is. We got to keep it to that. Yes, sir.
Is there an estimated quantity of geese that are present in our area? I know it can't be precise, but is there an estimated quantity?
Estimated quantity. We do counts. The number we used last was 180, approximately, is what we think that are in the entire community, different areas. So that's kind of the number we're working with.
And how, having said that, then is there an estimate of how many would have to find other places to exist or not exist in order for that problem to go away?
Yeah, the question on how many do we need to remove, how many less geese. Every goose matters. Every time, you know, we have a permit to get rid of 80. If we reduce our, you know, quantity by 40%, we're going to reduce the amount of feces in our lake by 40%, and that's enough to move our numbers. That's enough to move them down. So, you know, we have a permit for 80, so we want to take as many of those 80 as we can.
Would raking the beaches help assist keep the feces out of the water from the shoreline?
The question is, would the raking the beaches help keep the feces out? Of course, it'll keep some of it out, but a lot of it is when the geese get in there. And like everybody's heard that number, they, you know, 2.5, 3 pounds of poop a day, each one of these geese. A lot of it is when they're sitting in the water floating around. Will it help? It wouldn't hurt. You know, we did it the other day. And one of the things I get is, you know, we used to do it all the time. Why don't we do it now? That's not true. We've never done it. It's never been to service level. Of course, there's times we'll clean the beach up when we get out there. And part of our contract with the board is we will go out and clean the beaches, clean the parks, but it's not to clean the goose poop. That's not part of what we've been tasked to do. We did the other day after we got the high numbers, we got out there and just one day in the morning, we put almost 20 man hours into cleaning the beaches. That's not something we can sustain. We can't do 20 man hours a day. And by the time we get done, we'd have to go back and start over because the geese just go right after we leave, they're back there making a mess. So it's just not something we can sustain for any length of time.
A voluntary type situation where people that are close to those parks, they volunteer to do a sweep in the morning and a sweep in the evening. But maybe while we're in such a dire need right now, maybe it could be put.
Yeah, it's something we can look into. There was another question here. Jules, did you have a question? Oh, there we go. Peggy.
So thank you for this meeting. Thank you for your posts. Thank you for keeping us plugged in. Two questions. Mark and I go to the lake to swim almost every day, and we know enough to go out into the water. But there's little kids there playing all the time, and there are new people that moved here, and they don't know it, and they don't have the e-blast, and they don't have a sign. And we can go and tell them, but if there's some way, maybe you can put a sign out, little kids don't play at the beach this week, or something like that. The second question, how come the swim line is in so close?
I don't know about the swim line. I'll have to look into that. We do put the signs out on the beaches. We try to get the word out, Facebook, e-blast. Just sometimes we can't get to everybody. Yes.
Would it help, and is it legal, if we had our dogs come onto the beaches to get all the geese in the water the day that the hunters are coming?
It is, and we actually did it yesterday. Question is, can we get dogs out there? I think we have about 24 dogs that are registered with the goose chasing program we have here. So we do have that going. If it's something you want to get your dogs involved in, let us know.
Hey guys, we're having a hard time hearing over here.
Yes. Yeah, they do chase them, but they do actually help us on our depredation days.
Hey.
Okay, one more question. I'll talk about depredation. Yes.
Not this time, but the last time you did a bunch of shooting of the geese, which is very disturbing, but I understand what's having to happen. I was out there and I was hearing the gunshots, but I was also hearing men on the boat laughing. And I really found that so, so disturbing. Like I will accept you doing what you have to do, but please, please ask these men to have respect for the rest of us who have to listen to it, and for the fact that these animals are being killed. That's all I ask, and I think the person of your caliber and your position could state that to them.
I'd be happy to talk to them about that. I don't think that they're laughing because they're enjoying killing the geese. I've been 30 years in the military, a bunch of combat deployments. You wouldn't believe the times we laugh. When you're under a stressful situation, things aren't going well, you laugh, you make fun of things. And I have no thought whatsoever that these men are out there laughing at what they're doing. I think they're doing a hard job, and I think it's just a natural reaction from somebody. But I'll go ahead and let Bud talk.
Mike, we're over here.
I'd like to, is this on? Can you hear me? Okay. My name's Bud Abbott, lot 1455. I've lived here almost 20 years. The last 10 at least, I've been very active in the trying to control the number of geese that we have here. We've been doing boiling of eggs for years. It has helped. Everyone that we've been able to get rid of is a help. But there is a situation we're at now where we can legally take these other means to do it. I'm in charge of the boats. I'm in charge of the safety. I run it like a rifle range when we're out there. I'm sorry, but if you heard laughing, it's not from the boat I was on or the other shooting boat. We do not do that. We do not operate that way. We are trying to provide a service to this community, and I've been doing it for years. It's not a laughing matter.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, I'll go one more question, then I'm going to talk about the depredation permit, because there's a lot of questions on that. Go ahead, Linda.
Okay, I just want to share that this is very dear to me. 3 years ago, I got E. coli. Okay, for those who don't understand the really disaster that it can do to the body, especially children, I got it from the romaine lettuce. 3 years ago, they had an outbreak. Bought the product at a grocery store local, and they traced it back to romaine grown in California in fields. And it went to other countries. There were a few that died from it. Children have a horrible recovery. It took me 2 years with gut issues. And the medicine they have to put you on is almost as bad as the coli, because it has to kill it. So I love animals. I tell you, nobody loves them better than me. But I talked to the doctor, I talked to my brother's doctor, and a couple years ago in California, they had a lot of outbreak, and they traced it back to letting the wild boar roam through the lettuce, and they wouldn't get rid of the wild boar. So there were hundreds of thousands of people that got sick from the lettuce. And because E. coli, as my doctor said, is from one reason only, and that's called crap, okay? And it is from animals and the way that it deals with, you know, the chemical and the whole thing. And it is a horrible disease. And when I see kids out, even swimming here, I have a good friend whose son died at Lake Wildwood when they had their E. coli breakout 3 years ago, which is right outside of Penn Valley. That is something we have to take very serious. And until you get it, nobody loves animals better than me. But when you learn through the medical field and what happened, and I even went to the grocery store in Auburn where I bought the lettuce just to kind of see if it's just me, okay? And they had several come in because that lettuce has, and romaine is even more susceptible because it has a big stalk and it absorbs the crap that's allowed to be in the area. So I'm just saying, I'm grateful for what Sean and everybody is doing to eliminate anybody going through that.
Okay, one more question, then we'll talk about depredation for a minute.
Thank you for taking my question. And first of all, I'm sorry you got sick. That sounds awful. But my question is, I see a lot of children fishing, and my grandchildren are going to come up and fish this weekend. And so I don't know the answer to this question. How does this E. coli affect the fish in the water if our kids want to catch and eat the fish they catch?
I don't believe it affects the fish. I don't believe it's something you need to be concerned about. I've never heard of that. If you want to send me an email, I'll double check that with the Environmental Health Department, but I don't believe that's an issue at all.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, let's talk about depredation permit. A lot of misinformation on depredation permit, what we have, what we don't have, what we do, what we don't do. So we have a old depredation permit that we applied to have renewed several years ago. Due to the pressure from the Save Our Geese and these different folks, the feds have refused to act. The feds have not done anything on it, which does not harm us because there is a law that we can go ahead, as long as we apply for the renewal, we can continue to act under the old one if they have not taken action. So that's what we're doing. So we have an old federal permit that they haven't touched yet. They won't approve it because they don't want to upset the geese, the Save Our Geese people, and they don't want to deny it because they don't want to upset all of you guys. So they're just kind of like, well, we're not doing anything, and it's just kind of sitting right there. The problem is this group is pushing hard. I know they've served the feds with the lawsuits, legal action, and they pretty much put the feds in a no-win position. They are not going to act. They're kind of quiet right now. So part of our permit, it's not really helping us right now at times, is the non-lethal means. We still do all the non-lethal means. They're just not as effective. The birds adapt after a while, just like any animal adapts after a while, and it's just not as effective. We have people here posting online that, you know, once you scare them off, you know, the birds come right back, so that doesn't work. You mentioned the dogs. We get the dogs out there, they'll chase them, and they'll come back, or they'll go to the golf course. We take them off the golf course, they come to the lake. So all we're trying to do is just harass the birds enough that they will finally say, you know what, I don't want to live here anymore, and you leave, but that doesn't work. There's a reason they call them resident Canadian geese. They're not migratory. They live here, they have no place else to go. So we're doing all the legal means by our permit, we're doing everything we should to keep the permit. One of the issues I heard is somebody quoted me as saying that we did not add all the eggs. That's not true at all. We still go after the eggs. We're not as effective because the birds are adapting. They're not where they used to be. They're not where we can find them. If you look around this lake, how much of this property, this lakefront property, is owned by the association? Very little. We're, you know, 15-20% of this property is ours that we can actually go on and addle the eggs. We can't go on private property. there are people that are opposed to this, and they're not letting us, or they're not telling us that the eggs are there. We can't just go on their property. We don't know they're there. And if we do see it and ask, and they tell us, no, there's not much we can do. We can fine them, yes. Some of them don't care. Some of them, they'd rather take a fine than us add all those eggs. But they're not gonna let us come on and get to their property. So anything about us not addling the eggs is not true, and it's not helping our cause when people put that on social media and the feds look at that and the feds go, well, Sean, you're not addling eggs anymore. Well, where'd you hear that from? Oh, social media, it's gotta be true. It just, come on, people. Yeah, there's quite a few people that actually help us out that have lakefront property that will volunteer. Ron probably works with most of them.
Yeah, go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, we did this for, I did this for 14 years with the team. We were told twice that we couldn't treat eggs in a nest by two owners. The next year, they invited us on to do the eggs. There's no reason. We've never been refused to get on people's property, and that's where we have to go, unless they're on a marina boat or on. We've gotten on top of people's houses, on the boats, everywhere. I mean, there's no restrictions unless the owner says you can't go.
Right, and we're asking everybody this year to let us know. Rick Fowler has started a new email address. It's basically gooseeggs@lop.org. We're asking people, if you see one, send an email and we'll go take a look. So if it's on community association property, we're gonna go ahead and we're gonna add all the eggs, we're gonna get rid of them, we'll do what we need to. And you know, it's kind of it's a bit ironic if, you know, that those that are opposed to us shooting the geese, if you let us get out there and help us addle the eggs, get out there and help us stop the eggs from being born, we don't have to go out and shoot as many birds on the water. Help us out, identify where these nests are at, and let's addle as many eggs as we can so we don't have the issue later. And if, the sooner we shoot, the less egg, you know, the less time we have to go out and shoot them. So help us out. If you guys see eggs nest out there, let us know.
Quick question. I know zero about the birthing habits or nesting habits of geese. Where are the geese nests that the eggs are at? Are they at the lake? Where do they typically lay their eggs?
So where do they lay their eggs? It's typically close to the shoreline. It's close to water. We get them next to the pond out front. They're going to go somewhere where they can hide from predators. They kind of go back in bushes, kind of where they can't be seen. But it's usually always, you know, pretty close to water. Not too often do we find them far away. I don't remember seeing them. Ron, did you ever find any on the golf course? Yeah.
So lastly,
one on the golf course? Okay, Ron said he got one on the golf course, but typically they're always near the water.
Are there potential classes given to people who do live on the lake that could be their own goose militia, okay, and take care of the problem themselves without having to get everybody involved?
We're going to try and do something this year. We're going to try and do a little bit more education, a little more communication, trying to get the word out to help us find the eggs this year. We had a lot of goslings out there this year. We did add quite a few eggs of every nest we found. We just didn't find that many this year. So we are going to get the word out. We're going to try to educate people and what to look for when you see the eggs. You know, they're always in pairs.
I suspect that most people that have lakefront property, not everybody, but most people would not be opposed to getting rid of them critters.
Yep, and that's what we're hoping
if
for.
If you got more people involved in it, then it would be less of a legal issue for you.
Right.
Because what I do, you don't need to know about.
All right, go ahead, Rich.
Actually, it's more of a point, Sean, that we have found nests up in the crotches of trees on the golf course. We have found nests on the roof of the building above us. We have found nests on the roof of houses, sheltered by trees. As these animals feel the pressure that we've been applying, they have gotten more innovative about where they're nesting. They're not just by the side of the lake anymore. And we really need to rely on our community to notify us when we have a situation where we can treat the eggs.
Yep, I don't disagree. I was actually up trying to get that one nest off of here a couple of years ago. So yeah, they do find them, but for the most part, you're gonna find them closer to water, hidden in the bushes, and that's the most obvious place. But we're gonna get the word out. There's a lot of stuff online you can find on what to look for, how to find these guys. Again, they're always in pairs. They hang out in pairs. They're always together. So if you kind of see two geese away from everybody else, they're probably nesting somewhere around there, and you kind of look around.
Is Roundup in the state of California during molting season a possibility?
You know, I'm not sure what we'd really use that for, how effective it would be. Molting on the eggs?
No, it's where when they can't fly during molting season, they're rounded up and they're put into a truck.
They're talking about spraying.
Not the spray, not the weed killer.
Yes. Okay, I was confused there. I'm sorry.
Killer.
Yes. So to clarify, the question is, can we round up the birds during molting season? And yes, we can. The problem was we didn't get confirmation from the feds until Friday at probably 3:45, 4 o'clock, that we could actually exercise our federal depredation permit. So prior to that, we did not have that. And it was only Friday afternoon after a couple of conversations that we got the go-ahead. And first thing we did is call Bud and his team and Rick, and they were able to put that together in just a matter of days to get out and get some birds yesterday. So yeah, that's probably the best time. And hopefully next year we don't have these issues. It's gonna be, we have a couple of months of legal battles and we'll see how it plays out. Okay.
There's a report that I saw on Facebook, it must be true, but no, this actually was from Pine Mountain Lake in Groveland. It just came out yesterday. I don't know who posted that, but it was a formal, their findings and their process of dealing with the exact same problem. And I'm wondering, have you seen that? It was from, I believe, September 2022. And then I would encourage everyone to review that. It's about maybe 15, 20, 25 pages long, but it talks about the procedures that their formal process that they went through. And a lot of these ideas, you'll see in their process that have or have not worked and what they've decided to do about this problem. It's the same exact thing when we're dealing with here.
It is.
That's why I'm thinking, why reinvent the wheel? It's a formal procedure already detailed.
Most of what they have, they've got from us. So.
Oh, okay.
We've talked to Lake Wildwood was kind of the first to kind of go through this that had the issues. Like I said, Ron's been doing this for a long time, you know, before people were getting sick. So we've been probably doing it here longer than most of the other lakes. Pine Mountain Lake came to us and said, what are you guys doing? And we've sat down with them. We have meetings with Lake Wildwood every now and then, talk to them about what they're doing. So it's something we share the information with. There's some folks in the Bay Area that have the same issue. So it's not just us. There's a lot of people we talk to try and, you know, to talk about it in different different techniques, what are working. It really comes down to non-lethal don't work. The non-lethal just doesn't work. The birds adapt, they move, it doesn't bother them. And you can do it online and you'll see that non-lethals work for nobody. It always comes back to lethal. Bud.
Go ahead.
Oh, Christine.
I have just a couple questions. So is there anything, and I'm not being cheeky about this, is there anything we can do to battle the Save the Geese folk as members? Like, and I'm not saying anything, but, you know, like, can we, I mean, because it seems like they're using some means that are under, like, not cool. I mean, they're lying, they're being a little subversive, and is there something we can do as members besides just say don't believe any of the stuff you're seeing from them?
I think what help us the most is, let's stay factual on social media, let's stick to it's a health and safety concern, and let's not talk about the things that we're not doing or that we should have done better or those things, because they key in on those things. They see those things and they blow them up.
Can we file against them? I mean, can we say, I mean, we're being sued apparently possibly by them, or they're attempting. Can't we counter to say you're full of geese?
We are. We're doing those exact things. Unfortunately, you know, it takes time. It takes money.
I
won't go into too much detail, but when you get into a legal issue, they give you a legal brief on what their issues are. And it's supposed to be within two pages, so the judge can get to it. They submitted a 20-page brief, and the stuff that they have on there, 80% of it came off of Facebook. and it's not factual. And it just kills me. It's like, now I got to go spend an hour telling the judge why what they said here is a lie. That did not happen. That's just upset member that have a, you know, they want to, they disagree with the association, so they're going to jump on the bandwagon and say that happened, and they saw it, and they didn't. So, you know, the thing that's really going to help us the most is on Facebook, if somebody's calling us out and saying we didn't do something, call them out. It's not true. So that when we get to court and we have to bring these, they bring these darn print-offs from Facebook and say, well, no, you did it. Look, it's right here. And it's like, well, it's not true, but we have to go and defend it. We have to spend the time to prove it.
And then also another, and I actually got off of Facebook because it's weird, but there's also things going around because people still talk about it, that they wanted to go and like stop the shooting the other day. Can't they be fined by Fish and Game? Like, do we need to get it out there? Like, can't they be fined by us? Anybody that goes and tries to stop any of this, can we do something?
Certainly can. And this kind of goes back to one of the questions I was asked, you know, last year, is we didn't give a lot of notice when we went out and did the depredation on the lake. And the reason we didn't is we didn't want to tip off the protesters and when we're going to do it and why we're going to do it. Because they were talking about getting on the water, getting in our way, protesting, bringing the media, make it as hard as possible on us. And it's just more time, money, effort to get out there and do what we need to do. So we'll try to wait until the last minute, but a lot of people said, well, I want to know in advance. So Sunday we put that email blast out, and sure enough, a group said, well, let's get out there at 7 a.m. and we're gonna get in the way, we're gonna scare the geese, we're gonna do a lot of things that interferes. And interfering with anybody exercising their federal rights to execute a federal depredation permit is a felony. It's against the law. And they didn't show up and they didn't do it. It's probably good for them because we did have some folks out here in undercover just waiting to put up, you know, those silver handcuffs and take them away, but they didn't do it. So. But they all get called in. They can get called in for members. Members can call them in. So again, if we don't put the word out way in advance, it's because we're trying to just avoid that. You know, it's not that. Well, they did say they're going to get out and get them all moving out of the lake early, and that could have been what you saw. Yeah. All right, Bud. And again, Bud, just so you guys all know, Bud's been doing this for a long time, and you know, Bud's the one I called the other day and said, hey, can we put this together? And there's, you know, there's been concerns that they're not safe, and I can assure you Bud is probably one of the safest guys out there. Does everything by the book. He's, you know, there's no issues whatsoever. We've given all of our protocols to both Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife, and we're going above and beyond what we're supposed to do, and Bud's leading that up.
So I wasn't going to talk tonight, but here I am again. I can probably answer a few questions, so give me just a couple of seconds here. I started off with Ron, and he got me involved in this years ago. I was kind of ignorant about the reproductions of birds, etc. Although at one point in time, I was a docent at the Wildlife Museum. We took in native California species, rehabbed them, and released them back into the wild. That's a little bit of my background, but I didn't know about the Canadian geese. When we started addling eggs, we would go around the lake in a boat, look for eggs, look for nests, mark where they were, count the number of eggs. If they had one, two, or three eggs, we'd leave them, because if you took the eggs away, they would relay. If you destroy the nest, they will move down the street and make another nest. So the kind of trick is, you'll wait till they lay 5 to 7 eggs, then you come in and you oil the eggs, you addle the eggs, and they will continue to sit on them for a short period of time. They don't hatch, so then they are done. And the way that works is the female, at the end of her cycle of laying eggs, all her internal organs, reproductive organs, atrophy to reduce the weight of the bird so it can survive and live. So after that period of time, they are basically not going to lay any more eggs that year. So it's continual going around the lake. There's time involved. There's gasoline involved. And you can't just take them away. We've done this for years, and we finally figured out we've got a good system going.
but the darn birds keep hiding too, you know. So we do the best we can, and any help from the community would be great. But don't take the eggs away. Don't just break them because they're just going to go somewhere else and do it. Let some of us know, and we will deal with it. Any kind of vegetable oil seems to work. What you're doing is the egg is the chick inside of this developing gets its oxygen through the egg. What you're doing is you're eliminating the oxygen to the bird, and it stops growing at that point on. So if we try to catch them really early, the female will lay 5 to 7 eggs, then they will start to set. They will set on the nest, not till then, and after X number of days, they'll all hatch usually at 24 hours. So they have this cycle that they have to go through to be successful each year in their reproduction. And by eliminating the oxygen, it stops the growth of the bird. Then after about 7 days later, after that happens, we'll go back, we'll collect the eggs, and dispose of the eggs.
Yes?
Hi, I have two questions. The email that was sent out, I have two questions. The email that was sent out said that the efforts were going to go until noon, but you stopped at 9:15. Why?
The question is, why did we stop at 9:15 instead of going to noon? We typically will put it out longer than what we really need. We anticipate it will be done by 10 that day, but we want a little bit more if we need to. What happens is the birds get a little skittish. You get out and you shoot at them a couple times and they fly away the next time they see you. So it's the birds are kind of catching on there. And what Bud and his team try to do is they don't want to be out there shooting one bird here, two birds, three birds. They try to get together. Bud is very good about getting them all lined up, get everybody aiming, and they try to fire all at the same time, 2 rounds real quick to minimize the amount of gunshots you're going to hear on the lake. So it may sound like you only heard 3 gunshots, and it may be upwards of 12, 18 gunshots at one time. So after a couple of times of getting out there, the birds see the boat, they've been shot at twice, and they kind of realize, I'm not going to stick around, and they're taking off.
Okay, so that leads me to my next question. Okay. How many geese were actually shot yesterday?
We didn't get quite 20. I'll keep that. I'll say 20 for now, close to 20. That's really what we're shooting for. I don't want to give them any more to put in the next lawsuit. Let's just say we're trying to get 20. And we do have a depredation permit for 80. So we will continue to do this. I imagine you'll see us out there, or see Bud and his guys out there in the next week and a half. They'll do it again.
Sean, what did you mean when using non-lethal means on egg adling? What does the association view as appropriate non-lethal means to coincide with the defecation permit? That would be one question I have.
Okay.
And then I have a suggestion on the swimming advisory. Why don't we just put a permanent plaque, kind of like what they do at the national parks, that just gives a swimming advisory for young children and people who are autoimmune compromised. That way it's not so shocking when you have to go and put the notice out because it's already a known fact in the community. That's just a suggestion.
Yeah, I think we might get there. And I kind of mentioned that earlier. I think we may get to the point until we get this use issue in check. We may have to issue permanent signs out there, just swimming trail and rest swimming advisory. So back to the non-lethal, what do we do for non-lethal? So non-lethal is part of our permit. We have to do everything we can to get rid of the birds, and not have to use lethal means. As I mentioned, they've just kind of they've adapted. Doesn't bother them as much. We use lasers to move them off. Public Works has them. Whenever they see them in the morning, they go and shine their green lasers, get the birds flying. It's just flying them to a different part in the community. We have I think 24 dogs that are certified by Dan Malin, runs our program. I don't know if he's here tonight, but if somebody has a dog and they want to do it, get with Dan. So Dan certifies all the dogs. So we do the dogs, get those moving. We have the permanent mounted lasers down here at the beach. We do those. We have an ultrasound emitter that supposedly scares geese away. I'm not sure if it does or not. I know we've tried it, but it just doesn't seem to work. They use the big eye, the round inflatable eye, to scare the birds. We do that. We do the egg addling. So just about everything out there. There's a lot of stuff. Dark Horse uses a thing called the Goosinator, and it's really called the Goosinator. I've seen it. It looks like a really cool toy to play with. I'd love to do it. It's this big device. It goes on water. It goes on land. It chases the geese around, and it works for the first day or so. Then the geese just get used to it, and you go right up to them, and they just sidestep it, and it doesn't. They don't care. So again, they adapt everything. What's that? Oh yeah, the other thing we use is a product called Avian Avian Migrate. Is Sharon here? I don't know if Sharon's here. Sharon, yes. I saw your email. I'm sorry to get a response. But we do use a product called Avian Migrate. It's a grape smelling flavor. It's almost like Kool-Aid, and it's kind of what you mentioned. Okay, we use it, and the one thing different from just the grape Kool-Aid is this has a an additive to it that they can, that the geese can see. There's a wavelength that they can see that we can't see. So we spray that on the beaches, we spray that on the grass, and when they eat the grass, it gives them a bad stomach ache. It gives them like they're eating peppers. So they learn, I'm not going to eat that grass anymore, and then they see that color, that iridescent color, so they don't come back. So we use that as well. We spray that, and it goes out on the beaches, it goes out on the grass. So just about everything that's been tried, we do try it. Going back to the Goosinator, Dark Horse has given up on their Goosinator. They actually mount it to the top of one of their golf carts. And if you ever go there, you'll see it. They just drive around the golf carts and it's sitting on top. So it doesn't work either. Yes, sir. The plan to get to 80, it depends on how often we can get out there. I would hope by the end of August we'd get, what's that? Well, daily would be nice. We'd get there quicker. The problem with that is we have to red flag the lake. There's a lot of people that use the lake, and we'd have to, you know, kind of take that use away. So I'd imagine in the next several weeks we'll get close to 80 birds, and we should be good. Sue,
how do I get my dog certified? He loves chasing the geese.
Send me an email, and I'll hook you up with Dan Malin. All Dan requires to get your dog certified is he meets up with you, you take your dog out in a park, and just show that you have control of your dog, show that it can chase the geese, come back when called. It's not going to run off. It's not going to chase the deer. We don't want to chase some deer. So if you can demonstrate the dog is maintained, well-behaved, and comes back, we'll do that. We're getting all brand new scarves for the dogs. So whenever you see the dog, it's going to have a bright orange scarf. It's in one of the parks. It's one of our qualified bird dogs. And you have to put your scarf on the dog and then run around and chase the geese.
One quick question. Is there anything that the geese are insanely attracted to that they cannot live without?
Water. Just water.
So there's nothing that could attract them to, let's say, the yacht club, get them all in the yacht club, and then have a fire demonstration.
No, nothing we found, no. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to ask, I know you've tested for E. coli, but the geese can carry a lot of that stuff in bacteria, like cryptosporidium, they've got giardia, toxoplasmosis, they get bird flu. Are you guys getting any of that in your testing?
We're not testing for those. The likelihood of somebody catching that from a geese in a lake is pretty slim, so we don't typically test for that. The cost of it just wouldn't make it worth it. You know, the other thing we test for is, it's not related to the geese, it's a cyanobacteria. That is more likely than any of those other things you mentioned. The giardia is really gonna be somewhere, you know, in a small creek kind of thing. So no, we don't typically test for anything but the total coliforms, so we know how much bacteria is in there. We test for the STAC 0157, and then we test for cyanobacteria. Yes, sir.
So I appreciate the fact you guys want to trans. Testing. So in the spirit of transparency, can you please share with us? Can you please share with us, after this is all said and done, how much the attorney fees are going to cost us from the opposition of this thing? I'd appreciate it.
We definitely can. If somebody were to send me an email and make a request, and I can tell you what civil code to cite, we most definitely can. Yes, Peggy.
Yes, Peggy Fenstermacher, lot 1458. And we have a young grandson and his two friends who are planning to come up to the lake this weekend for 3 days. And we have held off sending the email out that they aren't going to be able to go into the lake without the risk of catching E. coli. And when I think about that, and I think about all the young families that have moved here in the last 3 years who have young children, it bothers me so much. If I were a young mom and I had to say to my children, I'm sorry you can't go in the lake, because there's goose poop everywhere, all the parks. You mentioned the fact that you spent 20 man hours last week investing in cleaning up the beaches. But that's not sustainable. My question is that sustainable for the rest of July and the month of August? Because I would venture to say that we invest more than 20 man hours a week in the golf course, and surely our lake is as important as the golf course.
Well, the question comes down to effectiveness. Is it effective? Is sweeping and raking goose poop off of the beach effective? Is it gonna take E. coli out of the water? It's not. So how effective is it to spend 20 man hours to pick up goose poop off a beach when what we're really trying to do is affect what's in the water? So it's not just the equation just isn't effective. Is it sustainable? Is it effective? Is it worthwhile? Would you know, how much money do you want to spend on something that's really not effective? So I understand your concern. If I had my kids when they were young and they wanted to go jump off the end of the dock and we had a swimming advisor, I'd let them. I don't think it's a concern. I would tell my kids, don't swallow the water, don't ingest the water, don't play in the water that's, you know, a foot deep, but I think you can also get out a little ways off the water and be safe. I think it's a simple advisory. I think you can read it up online. But then again, you know, is it effective? How much does the community want to pay to have the beaches rake every day? And it's more of a visual nuisance than it is a health and safety issue. That's what we're really talking about. It's not the feces that's on the beach that's causing the E. coli, it's the feces in the water. And once it's in the water, you can't take it back, it's in there.
Yeah, but the feces on the beach turns into going into the water. I think we should kind of hit it hard on both levels, having the beach clean and, you know, taking care of the beach population as well. That's just my personal opinion.
Speaking of manpower, we have service teams, which used to be committees, but now we call them service teams. Can't we kind of organize some kind of service teams to help with this goose issue?
I think we can. I think somebody mentioned that earlier. Somebody right there asked about that. And that's something we can do. If we want to get some volunteers together to do some of that, I see no reason why we can't do it.
Sean, I understand that SAW people have offered to help. Have we seen any efforts from them?
Anybody? I haven't seen them, no. Sure.
Really close? Very close? Like this? All right. Now you can hear me. So now I'm going to forget what I was talking about. No, I had a couple of things. One, when we were talking about finding the geese, something that I know that I watch for, and it won't help this year, but as the geese start pairing up, I watch for the pair. And the male will go off away, but the female will be off on her nest. So if you live on the lake and you see a pair hanging around, and then you see one, and then you see the two, and then you see one, watch where they go. You can help them find those nests. It's a real big help.
Yeah, that's
so
a great
next
idea.
Year do that.
And I think we're going to try and get the word out to give people what to look for. And even if you just see the pair of geese, I think we can get the Wildlife Management Service team to actually go and look for them for you. if it's not something you're ready to do, just identify, hey, there's a pair hanging out here, and we'll see if we can find them.
So, my other thing is, and this might not go over big, but you have people that are biting you and taking you to court because you're trying to kill the geese. You have a whole room here. Why can't we get together and go after them?
I don't disagree with you. And I understand sometimes the legal system kind of handcuffs us, makes it hard. I understand that people want to get out there. But if you do look at the federal law, the fine for killing a goose is up to 6 months in jail and $15,000 fine. So I'd love for you guys to do it, but I hate to see anybody get in trouble like that. So we're going to do our best just to continue fighting through the legal battles and get to the point that they just can't slow us down anymore.
So my question is, I live on the lake, and I don't have any geese on my property for whatever reason, because we have dogs and whatever. But so, do I not have a problem with E. coli if there are no geese around?
You probably wouldn't. So the question is, you know, would you have the E. coli there? You probably wouldn't. It's really going to be the higher concentration of geese in the time that they're there and how long since they've been there. And that's why they hang out at the beaches early in the morning, because there's nobody there. There's 20, 30, 40 together. That's really where we see the problem. Not so much on the individual shorelines. You're not going to see them where there's seawalls. They kind of like that the sandy area where they can get in and out of the water where nobody's going to bother them. And that's really where the higher concentration numbers are at, are on the beaches in the shallow water.
Yeah, to expand on what Bud Abbott was saying about our search for the geese, in February, the mating pairs chase the flocks out of here. So as late February, all we have is mating pairs in the lake. And what the team used to do is we go around the lake and we spot where the pairs are hanging out. And with this is probably a weekly trip. Sometimes if it gets busy, we take two trips a week. But when we see a single male, then we go looking. We know there's a nest there, and we go looking for it. So it's very easy to spot them. The homeowners can see the same thing that the team does. If you see in late February, if you see two geese hanging around, you know they're going to nest in that area. I mean, it's happened every year. We know it. We know it works. Bud can vouch for that. And they give themselves away, really. You know where they are. You know the area within, say, 50, 100 feet where they're going to nest. And when you see a single one, you just go find the nest. I mean, it's not that hard.
No, I appreciate that, Ron. And when we get ready to put this together, we are going to try to get together some kind of campaign to get the word out so people understand. We'll definitely reach out to you and Bud and all of us get together and come up with a good information campaign to get the word out. A lot of people, there's a lot of new people on the lake. Things have changed over the last couple of years, so a lot of people just aren't aware of that. So I think we just need to do a better job of getting the word out to everybody on what they should be looking for. And we're not asking them to do anything. Just reach out to Bud and the Wildlife Management Service team, and they'll get out and take care of them. So thank you, that, Ron. All right.
Repeat the question, please.
Come on, Michelle. Do we need to go over that?
Hey, Sean, is there a home testing kit, kind of like a pregnancy check kit?
You know, I'm not sure. I've heard there is. I personally haven't seen it, but you could probably find something online to test it. The tests aren't that expensive. If it's something you want to do, we can... we can let 49er Water know that some people want to test their own water in their on their beaches, and I'm sure they do it as well. All right, any more questions? Anybody else? I think I touched on everything on my list. So just to wrap it up, we are going to get out, and we are going to try and get some more geese here in the near future. I'm going to leave it to Bud and these guys.
I've got a non-geese question.
Non-geese question.
Are we going to lower the lake this year?
Question is, are we going to lower the lake? I don't know. we are working. It's going to be a Cal State Water Board decision. It's going to be the governor making that decision on whether we're still in a drought. If it were up to us, we'd definitely lower the lake. We've got a lot of work to do ourselves. But right now, it's up to the governor and whether he allows it. No more questions? All right. Hey, thank you guys all for coming tonight.